Yeah,
So I wonder if because this is something that I've only come across actually during the training, the home practice that we have develops with us as our process develops. It feels like that's true, but in the training of it, there's something about the fact that we are leading, that what we don't want to do is create too many spaces for the mind to wander, for intruding thoughts to come in, for distractions to arise. But I think at the beginning, certainly, in our little breakout room, we felt that, there were conversations around the pace, wasn't there? If you say it at normal speed, it can feel perhaps a bit hurried, depending on how your home practice is and what you do personally.
You have a comment there, Donna and Patricia?
I did one, but I had a very different experience for me. Quite quickly, my fingers tingled and my forearm felt warm, and that's not common for me at all. But then I still have difficulty sitting in one position for a while, so I got quite a bit of pain, but not. But it was like my back pain, not my, it wasn't my hip or anything. And I had to sort of move about and sort of stop and stand up. But it was what I did
But the
experience was good. You know, it was fine.
but yeah, but what we're talking, well, yes, and thank you for that, because I mean, I had a different experience too to my norm, which was really quite interesting. But the point about the pacing, is always just to make it ordinary. And if we start worrying about how long something is or whatever, then it's just an ordinary rhythm of delivering the phrases, which is what we do. But Bev, you're quite right. People do evolve in their own way. And I found that in that one for me, then I was aware of doing heartbeat and breathing simultaneously, and then being quite astonished at how little I needed to breathe. I was quite happy to sit there not taking a breath at all, almost to the point of experimenting. So that was my experience. But actually, I had no words going on at all. I was just in with the body, knowing what it all was. But when. So that is how we evolve. You're absolutely right there, Bev. And therefore, I think it ties in with what the Germans or used to say. Never, never to lead through an exercise. But then I think we can get into a different problem, which is again coming back to what you said, Bev, that when we're teaching it, we want to sort of help a focus. If we do anything at all with leading, we perhaps are helping that focus just to keep following it through, and keeping the focus on it rather than dive going off on other things. So I would always caution against doing it for too long for that reason. Donna, haven't heard from you, sorry.
No, I came in at the because I popped out for a drink as well when you were coming back, and you were talking about Sebastian, I think,
Oh, yes, and the
pace of
legs.
it. Yeah, is that where it sort of started? I've listened to Sebastian. I know you teach it at the normal pace. So obviously it is a different when we do it personally as well, isn't it?
So, what you're saying that Sebastian has led it through on those record on that
Yeah.
recording? Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, I think with like you, Jane, I can go in it and I'm just there. I don't kind of go where my brain goes. I watch my attention rather than tell it where to go. So sometimes it's quicker. Sometimes I spend more time with the breath, maybe, or maybe it's because there's no words and I just hang around there for a while.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's also, Jane, I remember when I learned it, in the beginning it was longer and it
Yeah.
just got shorter and shorter
And
and shorter.
shorter. Yes.
And Sebastian has started quite recent with AT, isn't that right, Sebastian? So I think that's a thing as well. It will get quicker and quicker.
I think one of the questions, if it was a client that I might be asking, is are you trying too hard? You know, so oh, I've got to make my arms heavy and warm, or, you know, and have that kind of focus on it.
So yeah, I have a question actually. I came across, you know, while leading one of, you know, one of the, I think a couple of, I don't know, weeks ago, I remember that my client said, you know, we've got just 40 minutes left because I must leave. I have an appointment. And I felt quite pressurized. I mean, I wasn't, you know, because normally you're not timing before. You don't know how long it's going to take. Sometimes you might have to discuss. So I had like to speed up a bit, you know, I felt pressurized, you know, in that moment. So I'm not sure from my point of view. So the question is, if like the client is giving us like, let's say a time frame, you know, I can do it that day, but only 40 minutes or 35 minutes. Shall we reschedule it or go with the flow? What do you suggest when they are like, you know, like limited? Because I think, for example, if I know that I have an appointment in the next 40 minutes, I don't think I concentrate properly on the 18. Maybe yes, but you know, your mind still wanders around. So I believe personally, and I mentioned to my client, I said, I mean, next time when we're going to have the 80 session, let's make sure you're not going to have anything afterwards, you know, something that, you know, let's say, I don't know, is an appointment or something else or a meeting. So personally, I believe, you know, they should have more time after the session, you know, like, I don't know, chill, whatever, where I'm wrong.
Well, there we're talking about the appointment session, aren't we, with the client? Yes. So that's yes. That's the expansion, not yes. Just the exercise. But I quite agree with you, that, yes, if we've got something that we've got to be somewhere else at a certain time, it is going to spoil what we're doing just before it. I quite agree with that. And, of course, the other thing about our time frames when we are teaching autogenic training is that we have an agenda, don't we? We must hear the feedback of what's happened before and practicing the last exercise as well. Then the feedback for the week and the dialogue that happens around that. And then we've got our agenda, which is to introduce the next exercise, and we've got to explain it, and then you've got to do it. And then you will have your offloading bit to do as well. It's quite hard to fit all that into 40 minutes. So you must have an hour and have the flexibility as well to go over it, because we can't always be sure that someone, well, this is how I work anyway, that someone is contained within that hour. And of course, sometimes the hour is a very good discipline because someone talks for hours and hours, just like I'm doing now. And they get their verbal diarrhea, and they use up most of the session on things that actually are not really relevant to what we're doing. And it's our job then to move things on and just shut down that topic because we've got our agenda to do, etc. So sometimes it's quite hard to manage. Sorry, I'm coming back to you though, Sebastian, because you're quite right with your realization, not so hurried. Yeah.
I find it a bit tight, and I noticed that even the client wasn't engaging properly.
Well, because, that's, you know, that's
they,
even
yeah,
more.
They were quite stressed. So I said, you know, next time, definitely, no, we need to leave a bit of more room just in case we go over.
Yes, absolutely right. Pierre, what were you going to add?
I just want to ask, Jane, how many minutes do you have between sessions? So I always have one and a quarter between my sessions, because then I just allow a little bit more time and I need to go to the toilet, you know, and have a drink.
Absolutely. I take half an hour between. If I'm so lucky to have two people on the same day and so on, I would make sure I have a half hour between.
Okay, so you still allow, so that's one and a half.
So it's a 1.5 hour session, of which one is with the client, with perhaps a 10-minute overspill, because sometimes people are going through some difficult things, and I'm perfectly happy for that
especially in
to
the
happen.
Beginning. Yeah.
But those who are trained within the 50-minute hour principle, Donna and Patricia maybe.
I can do it with less gaps, because we are trained with a 50-minute hour, so my brain is sort of, it knows when 50 minutes is up. I don't know why, but I think it's getting used to an hour now as well, because I've done AT for longer and I always give an hour, but I always leave an hour and a half for an assessment. I like block out an hour and a half for the assessment, because I tend to always go over the hour in an assessment, so I would then give myself 2 hours for the next person. But yeah, if I've got the time, I'd do an hour and a half in between, you know, for the half hour in between the AT one. So they get an hour and then we get the overspill if there is some. And then I get a chance to do my notes and get a drink.
It's an interesting thing that I've thought about over a long time, because of course a counselling appointment or psychoanalysis or any other kind of psychotherapy as well, it's a 50-minute situation which is understood, and it is under the control of the therapist. Right, our time is up now. We must, so that's how that happens. And we can't always gauge how long our clients need for their feedback or whatever else is going on. We might have to have other decisions made that we don't move on with the next exercise quite yet, or something like that. And then that needs to be talked about. Or you may decide to actually let's focus on offloading this week and we will leave the new autogenic one or whatever. And if we try and fit it all in, it's quite hard. We've got our agenda, haven't we? Which in other settings, there is no agenda. It's just what is going to be discussed that week. What do you think?
It's to follow the structure, really, isn't it, Jane?
We need to follow our structure, absolutely. But then it's the bit maybe I'm just speaking to myself. The bit that is hard for us to control is what the client is saying, when we know we must move on to the next bit and the bit and the bit and the bit. And it's easy enough to say that to the client. We need to be stopping talking about this now and move on. And in fact, if you have a group, that helps a lot, because nobody can talk for too long when we're in a group. But which is actually good. It keeps the responsibility of the autogenic process very much with the client. If they can't say all the things that they might have said had they been alone with you, that might actually be a good thing, just to not go there and allow what is happening to stay with the person. Yes, Ben.
Yeah, as you've been sharing, I also wanted to bring in maybe another slight different perspective on, you know, the client keeping time free after their appointment. Because in real life, you know, often one of the resistances maybe or arguments to practicing AT is the busyness, the appointments, the things that are coming on. So having an experience of, okay, we're working on AT and then when it's finished, we go on to the next thing may be helpful.
Yes. So our sessions actually have natural moving on points, don't they? Yes.
Yeah. And at the end, I know myself in my own practice, you know, I need to say to myself, even if I've got a pressurized morning, I'm going to fit in AT, even if immediately after my allotted, however much time I've given myself, 20 minutes, I'm then on to the next thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's a good thing to bear in mind, isn't it, that you know we can always find time to slot it in, even if we don't have space to kind of enjoy the more relaxed state or whatever's gone on with us during the exercise.
And that's a slightly different slant on Sebastian's point about actually having free time afterwards. Doesn't actually have to be anything that we're doing with autogenics. It just frees you up during the session not to have your mind on something else you've got to do immediately afterwards. That's what I've caught up with you from your description, Sebastian. So it's just slightly different angle.
Yeah, it's interesting to see all the different perspectives on it, isn't it? And the uniqueness of our clients, you know, that people respond differently to pressure and busyness and schedules.
Yeah.
What I have found as well is that if I don't mentally have a time frame on it, then it goes over.
Ah, yes.
That's what I have found. And if I have, okay, we have 1 hour for this, because I ran over the first three times, I think I ran over 15 minutes. And I think there's something that happens unconscious when we have a time frame. It's like everything fits in the hour. It's bizarre. And I find that in my other work that I do with clients, that if I have the intent that we get everything done this hour that is needed to be done,
yes,
it seems. So I always very mindful of that when I start a session. It's not always that it happens, but it's very different if I don't and when I do. There's a flow to the session because there's an intention that we will get done what needs to be done for the client.
Yeah. Yes. I'm feeling, I'm sure you're right that intent, I mean, I have that intent always. And the client too has that intent, you know. The sessions are so much an hour, and that's what we're doing. So they too do have that focus as well, or they hopefully do have that focus. Hey-ho. Yeah. Donna?
No, I was just thinking, actually, of the session and my autogenic practice, like my attention moves on. I think something similar to that happens in a session because you sort of unconsciously, you know where you're supposed to be when.
This is a good
Does that
point.
Make sense? So kind of I know, well, hang on a minute, I think I need to be introducing this now, so I need to shut that down and move on. So it's like you sort of follow it, and I'm sure that evolves with practice. That there's something in you that knows, right, this is where we need to be now at this time. Because I'm sure that's what happens with the 15-minute, I never needed a watch. I almost sort of, oh, yeah, it is like 45 minutes.
Yes.
So we need to start wrapping up now.
Yes.
But, yeah, I'm sure that happens as well.
Yes.
I look forward to arriving at that place, Donna, where my mind knows what's coming next.
It's interesting. It's a kind of overlap or integration or something between our inner practice and working with the client. We both are sort of synchronized in some way. And of course, the other thing is, sorry.
No, I was going to say we must tap into our own process because I know we're not going into the state, but we are repeating it. And I do find myself kind of going sometimes with it. Not to the extent that I've gone, but you get into that flow with it, don't you? So while you're guiding them through.
Yeah.
So you must be.
Yes. And this is why we keep our eyes open all the time.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, I'd be gone if I didn't.
Quite. But I always start by closing my eyes with them.
Yeah,
and I make it look as though we're doing it together, and then so if you're doing that, that's brilliant.
I am, absolutely.
Now, where are we with your own practical, your client work? Today's session is very much about how that is going. We've already touched on points of it, haven't we? Does anyone want to start off? I mean, Bev, we know that you've completed your first client. I think you have as well, Sebastian, have you? I can't remember.
Yes, I have finished the session. I'm just a bit behind with the paperwork, which I'm doing at the moment.
But when you say session, do you mean...
I have finalized. Yeah, I've done all the courses.
You've done so, and how about you, Pia? Have you done one?
I have two. I need the follow-up session.
Okay. So you've all taught one person.
Oh, sorry, I haven't had the follow-up yet. No, the follow-up.
Oh, no, that's okay. No, that can wait. And let me say now, before I forget, if you want to send in your case study before the follow-up, that is absolutely fine to do that. If you want to sort of get it in and then add the follow-up as an addendum and send it through afterwards with how that went. And if you prefer not to do that, that's fine. But I'm just saying that in case that helps you in any way. Okay.
And Jane, it's for the 15th of October, isn't it?
Yes, we need it to is. It. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So who would like to start describing their time with their first client? And we have till 11. We have an hour now until coffee. And then we have another half hour after coffee. So we have half an hour for each person.
Perfect.
Aren't we lucky? We would never have had that with 10 students. Okay. We may not need it all.
I don't mind starting unless anybody's dying to go.
Doesn't look like anybody's dying at all for any reason.
No.
So I think we will just I love our language, isn't it
Great,
wonderful?
isn't it?
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. I'm going to probably scribble some things and we let you talk, Bev. If there's something that we don't actually understand, then we certainly raise a hand and say, hang on, what did you mean here?
Sure.
But otherwise, talk away. And it may take 10 minutes, it might take you longer. Okay. And questions we can raise afterwards. Is
Sure.
that okay?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So if I start with the assessment, and that's fresh in my mind having written the case study segment. So yeah, the
And
thing
would you give your client a name? Are you going to do that?
Jenny,
Yes, okay,
my
because it's
client.
lovely to talk about someone. Okay, we
Yes.
yes,
Yes,
lovely.
my client Jenny,
Yes, okay.
an acquaintance of mine that we met a few times on a retreat, who had heard me talking about autogenic training and expressed an interest. So I reached out to her with my kind of AT flyer, and yeah, she expressed quite a keen interest. And her reasons really were just to kind of improve her mental and physical well-being. And in terms of what she shared on her assessment form and what we discussed during the assessment, it was lots of different things, naturally. But the thing that I found made me the most nervous was the fact that she is a retired medical practitioner. She's worked in the NHS. She's worked in palliative care for 14 years. She's taught palliative care to other nurses. So, you know, lots of experience. And here am I, with no real medical experience, having not had medical conditions myself. I'm not treating her condition. I'm not diagnosing her condition. I'm merely, you know, gathering information and listening to her talk about her experiences. But I found that, you know, triggered quite a lot of nervousness in me because I've never done it before. So I think the fear was, what if I come across as inexperienced to do this role? You know, what if it's so blatantly obvious? Because I think in the past, maybe it was only doctors that taught autogenic training. So I was kind of thinking, am I going to look like a fish out of water here? So, you know, and I was pleasantly surprised that actually, just by doing a bit of research beforehand on some of the medical conditions that my client has had and has currently, I had enough, you know, baseline knowledge to be able to understand the things that she discussed and what she wrote about in her assessment. So in terms of those conditions, when she was pregnant with her first child, 5 months pregnant, she was diagnosed with IDDM, which is diabetes type 1, and all the kind of, I guess, the drama that ensued with then having to, you know, because they didn't have the technology that we have nowadays, but having to inject insulin 4 times a day, all the finger pricks to test the blood sugar whilst becoming a mum for the first time. So, you know, that would have been a big thing. However, that was 30 years ago. So it was interesting to note that when I read that, I thought, wow, you know, big hefty thing. When my client talked about it, she seemed so like matter of fact that, and you know, it was just par for the course. And also, Jane, you wrote in some of your feedback that, you know, that's quite a nurse's way of responding, isn't it? It's quite matter of fact just about these things. But I certainly didn't pick up residual trauma from that. And she wrote also about the trauma of working in palliative care. And the difficulty of seeing the suffering that can happen with, you know, illness and death, and maybe a bit of an attitude that you just had to get on with it when you're in the caring profession. And she experienced burnout on and off during the 14 years she was in palliative care. And she had a number of CBT sessions over that time, which she found helpful. And it was during that time she took up meditation, looking for ways really just to find a way to de-stress, to calm the body and the nervous system with what she was experiencing. And then in 2014, she was diagnosed with breast cancer. And then as part of the treatment for that, she had a radiotherapy and a lumpectomy. Is that the right word? Yes.
Lumpectomy.
Yes, a lumpectomy. And then as part of the treatment with the radiotherapy, it caused osteoporosis. And that was diagnosed because she had a fall and fractured her elbow. And when we talked about it, it was clear, and she even expressed, you know, that that made her more angry than the cancer. And that was a really interesting perspective, you know, because to get cancer, you know, is quite a frightening thing. I've never had it, but family members have. And yeah, she didn't talk about it like that, with fear. She had mentioned on her form and also in talking to me, you know, that, you know, maybe autogenic could help her, because there is a, you know, something about a recurrence of breast cancer, that it can come back. And so she was mindful to try and help herself as much as she can, to try and, yeah, prevent things like that happening to her. She also talked about managing her blood sugars and how when she was out of her normal routine, particularly away on holiday, or if she had a lot of things going on and she wasn't eating in the way that she normally was, that she would get kind of spikes and low blood sugar at night. So she was wondering whether that would be something that AT might help with. And I did talk about the fact that we needed to kind of, you know, ensure we were able to monitor what was happening with blood sugars. And at that point, you know, we talked about the device that she'd recently had installed on her arm, which gives instant access to her blood sugars via an app on her phone, and how that had changed her life, that she wasn't needing to do finger pricks anymore. So that was really good. So yes, we kind of, over the course, without delving too deeply in it, just, you know, kept an eye on what was happening with the blood sugars. And I did mention what Anne shared in the teaching session, that, you know, it could be that AT does influence blood sugars. And that's something we'll see as we go through the training, what happens for her. Yeah.
Let me just stop you. We've had 10 minutes.
Yeah.
We haven't yet started teaching AT.
Okay.
So we're going into a lot of detail, and I thank you for it. I'm just saying that for now. Yeah.
Great, so great stuff. Super. Thank you. Glad that I can skip and carry on. Yeah. So assessment. Yes, I was relieved to come to the end of it. And it did prove to be more of an experience of listening. You know, of being there, of listening, of asking probing questions. I realised afterwards there were quite a lot of questions I didn't ask that maybe I would have liked to have asked, but then we would have run over even more because it took an hour and 20 minutes for me. There were no contraindications, so there was nothing there that we needed to, you know, absolute or relative. So we scheduled all of our sessions and started the course. What I found with my client, Jenny, is that she was very eager to be a good student, a good client. Yeah, I noticed that she wanted to practice. She did, in fact, practice, you know, I would say 90% of the time she did practice 3 times a day, which was great. You know, it was like she'd made a commitment to do this and she was going to try and do it to the best of her ability. I didn't encounter any real resistances. The main one, if it did occur, was about the filling in of the diary. And I was able to talk to her again and reiterate that really it's to enable me to monitor what's arising for her, to, you know, from a safety point of view, because it might be difficult to remember things. But also it helps her to see her, you know, evolving process over time, that she can look back on that. So yeah, so she kept it up, but she was asking me, do I need to fill this in for the rest of my life? So I did let her know that, you know, that was her choice. But, you know, if she could keep it up to the follow up, that would be great. I did a lot of preparation each week in writing my trainer notes, like a script for how I was going to go through, because there's so much to include in terms of the rationale, you know, for introducing the new formula and then the offloading exercises. And by following that, because I was able to kind of have my notes up on the screen when we were doing Zoom sessions, the first one, incidentally, our first session was planned in person, but a last minute change meant it went on Zoom. But our second to last session was in person. So just to give you the overview, mainly on Zoom, one in person. I found probably the hardest bit of the teaching was the offloading exercises. I think my client was less receptive to those. I use them and I think they're great. So it was interesting to be teaching them to another person who says, you know, that they don't really ever feel anger to that degree. So, you know, and they don't really feel like they need to cry. In fact, you know, on their assessment, they said, you know, they're in a really good place. In fact, they're happier now than they've ever been since they've retired. So yes. And at one point, something that came up was my client said, they, you know, they get blissed out when they meditate. And there was some frustration that maybe, you know, all the time she was taking to practice autogenic training, she at that point probably was missing the blissed outness she was getting from her meditations. So I thought, well, that's interesting to note. And I talked to her a little bit about the difference between autogenic training and meditation at that point, and, you know, explained what we talked about at the beginning, that it's best, you know, not to mix up two kinds of altered state practices. But, you know, once she's learned autogenic, that she'll know the difference between the two and when she wants to practice each one. So that was kind of how I dealt with that as it arose. And then at the end of the session, one of the check-ins, she talked about how she'd arrived at some state of bliss during her autogenic session, you know, which I tried not to have a reaction to or anything, you know, that's quite normal and all of that, you know, but it clearly, you know, it was working, you know, her passive concentration must have been good for that to be able to arise in her, without putting that as some goal to arrive at, you know, that's not the purpose of autogenic training. One of the sessions, the cardiac awareness, that triggered my need to reach out for guidance from my supervisor, Patricia, who helped me in that, just because she wrote me an email saying that she wasn't feeling great and could she stop doing the exercises, which kind of rang alarm bells, you know, in me thinking, okay, she's having discharges, something's going on. So it was about asking the right kind of questions and responding. And I went down the route of, okay, what's happening? Is there any need for concern? We can alter the exercises and reduce them if we need to be. We can also go back to short stitch. And then I arranged a call the following morning because I got the email in the evening and we spoke on the phone. And by then she was, you know, a bit calmer. But I think what she's experiencing is connecting in a sensate way with the heart area, and, you know, and she's not felt that part of her body before. So suddenly she's aware of sensations and it was causing some anxiety in her. She described the sensations as like fizzing or vibrating. And with her being a medical professional, I checked with her, she's checked her heart rate, her pulse, all her vitals were absolutely fine. And I said it was something, you know, that we could just monitor and see how she got on as the course happened. And she said she didn't experience that every time during her autogenic exercises. So, mindful again of time and me giving you all this detail, we completed the course and it went very, very well. I even got a lovely thank you card from her. And she wished me well for the future. We have our follow-up in a few weeks, and I've sent out an evaluation form and the follow-up My Core form, which is a slightly different one to the MyMOC form. So I'm just waiting for those to come back. So yes, that's in a nutshell.
Yes, and you've done extremely well. Well done, and to have held all that detail and then given it all to us just then. Very, very interesting. I have a burning question actually, just at the point where you stopped, because it's quite a sudden sort of thing. Somebody says, I want to stop doing this. Was you wanted to stop autogenics completely or just the cardiac exercise?
Yeah, just kind of stop the exercises for a while. And so not leave the course.
Right.
But yeah, given how, and I say this in inverted commas, how compliant, you know, she had been, eager to follow procedure, that's what made me think something's really going on here. And then I needed to put my kind of student hat on and think, right, what do we do when someone's having an adverse reaction? And and it was great just to be able to kind of share, you know, my approach with Patricia, because I thought rather than ask Patricia, what should I do? I'm, you know, with Patricia's guidance, it's like, well, I will know what to do, tap into my own wisdom and what I'm learning on the course, put that in an email, send it to Patricia. And just from a safeguarding point of view, make sure I'm on the right track. And it was wonderful to know I had that support behind me, because it was quite scary when it happened. I was like, oh, drama, help. I felt so responsible for my client.
And your client did what with it, with your advice?
Yeah, so she carried on with the exercises in the end.
Did she reduce?
No. So yes. just because I offered her the different options and actually talked to her and been open to her about being anxious and in a way normalized it as part of her process.
Well done.
I think it subsided the anxiety. Yeah.
And it's funny how these things show up in a way that nobody would expect. But yes, there's anxiety behind, probably old anxiety, maybe. We don't know. We will never know. But old anxiety just hides in there. And then something arises through the autogenics. And for her, it was, God, I'm not used to looking at my heart. Whatever's going on here? And her perception of fizzing and other sorts of things. I'm saying perception there because we don't know. I mean, I don't really like the idea of a heart fizzing myself. So I'm quite sure that I don't suppose that it is a proper physiological something. But her sense of herself in that place wasn't very pleasant. You did a wonderful job there reassuring her. Absolutely fantastic. So she could carry that forward. She didn't even drop the number of repetitions or anything like that.
No.
No.
So on the evening where she sent the email, I said to her to listen to her own kind of wisdom on this. I didn't enforce it. I left it open. And that evening she didn't do a practice, but then she resumed. And especially after we'd had a chat, she carried on as normal, but she did one in the morning before our conversation, a full one. So
you had sent suggestions in your email. There's this, you can do this, but she didn't practice that night. Very wise. That was her own sense offered by you. Lovely. Lovely. What happened next? The next week?
In the check-in, one of the first things that I asked her was how she got on with the sensing of the heart area. And also when I introduced cardiac regulation or cardiac awareness, I did stress that, you know, you don't have to sense your chest area. You really, you know, you might sense your heartbeat. I never do.
I think we moved on though. What happened in the next session? In the next session, you're going to introduce the breathing formula?
Yes.
What happened there?
There was no resistance to that. In fact, my client Jenny said how lovely that was. She absolutely loved the phraseology of it.
And that's the bit that I was looking forward to hearing, because very often it's a nice thing that we can give our clients, the ones who've had a bit of difficulty with the cardiac awareness one.
Yeah.
we can say, you know, you would never say this until you have taken them through their first experience of the breathing formula. But when the feedback is, oh, that was lovely, that was just so nice, and there have been no issues at all, and the issues sounded as though they've ironed out anyway, I have to say. And then it's very nice for us to be able to say, well, you know what? Sometimes the heart and lungs, they work so much as a team. Yeah. That we've given you a cardiac exercise, but we haven't given you anything of the rest of the team. And today is the day when the rest of the team has come in and has put that together, the heartbeat and the... And that's what I very often say, because it's, I think it's true, actually. I've seen it so often, some disquiet with the heart one. And as soon as we add, even if people don't want to stop, it doesn't have to be dramatic, but they just haven't gone on with it and they're not quite sure, but and they don't think I like it and things like that. As soon as we do the breathing one, and I'm sure we can all sort of feel that. Sorry, I'm doing all the talking here.
No, good to hear.
But that one, that was what I was waiting for when we were there. Donna, while we've stopped, would you have anything to add on this little bit?
I think you've done brilliantly, Beth, yeah. Actually. Yeah. I really do.
Yeah,
and I'm so glad your confidence is coming up, because it should be there. You should be confident. Mm. You know what you're doing, definitely.
Yeah,
and it's, I think, nice, you know, then that you know what you're doing as well.
It's very nice to know that we do not have to be doctors, and do not have to know the ins and outs. The historic thing is she was diagnosed with diabetes at mid pregnancy. You have quite rightly wondered what the impact, stress-wise and so on, or having done your research and realised everything that a new diabetic has to cope with, plus a new baby, etc., etc. And she seems to have had no residual impact from that at all. Now, I am going to be breaking all the rules, and I'm going to link up her disquiet with the cardiac formula with maybe some release of some anxiety of some kind. I don't know her. I shouldn't be making such a prediction, but that's the sort of way that autogenics can work.
Yeah.
And if it feels like the right thing to open with her, that's fine. I'm now doing talking. So you had taught her the rest of the exercises with no particular issues.
No, everything went fine.
Went fine from there.
Yeah, from there. Yeah. Although I do need to check my notes, just to see. You know, it might come up when I'm writing my case studies notes. Oh, I forgot to say that in my group tutorial. Oh, I forgot about that. But it was smooth plain sailing from there.
From there, yes, and I think that's another thing about putting heart and breathing together. It's the it's plain sailing. I don't know. In recent years, I'm beginning to say, when we get to introducing the heartbeat formula, that I say that it's always a good idea to always backtrack and say, hey, look, we've started with our limbs. We started only with one limb at first. Then we moved on to heaviness. We've got the arms and the legs involved. We've got all of that. And now, I think today we are at the heart of our autogenic training course. I don't know. It's just a bit of language that can be quite interesting, because actually most therapies, meditations, everything else, they don't go to the organs at all. It's quite unusual. Bev?
Yeah, just as you say that, one of the things Jenny did bring up was how, having meditated for the last, I don't know, number of years, that it was very heady. And she said that what she'd noticed in autogenic training was a connecting to her body in a way she'd not done before. Yeah.
Isn't that fascinating? Is that the answer that we're all wondering? What's the difference between autogenics and meditation? And meditation is head. It certainly isn't relaxation, we know that.
Unless it's embodied meditation, you know, like cat or a meditation where you concentrate on the belly center, because then you're sensing a little bit like the sacral plexus. Mm. And I'm only speaking from my own experience of practicing it then, and maybe because I do autogenic, I do connect with my body in a way that perhaps other meditators who don't do
you
autogenic don't. But
Any comment from Pierre and Sebastian? A minute each.
I think you did fabulous, Bev.
Oh, thank you, Pia.
I think you're such a natural of this. I really do. That's nice.
Thank you. You don't know, inside me, not only is there an inner admin queen, that's something on our WhatsApp group, but also there is, you know, a real, like, lacking in confident, fearful part of myself who's never worked with clients before. So I always bring her, you know, I honor
you're,
that.
You're so confident, and you describe, you know, your client with a lot of details so beautifully. So yeah, you've done it well. Yeah, I'm really impressed. And you know, just the introduction about the past, about, you know, whatever happened. Yeah, and you're so confident. And yeah, I was just curious whether you've done it face to face or online, but you just mentioned that you had the first two sessions face to face, if I'm not mistaken.
No, I'd plan to do the one where we talk about technique face to face, but we ended up last minute going to Zoom on that one. And we did, trying to think, the second to last one. So what would that be? It was the forehead cool we did in person. With
but you get the chance to see the client face to face, isn't it?
Yeah.
That I think that is making a huge difference.
Yeah.
I think it does. And of course, in this situation, you tried to do it earlier where it would have made the best difference, but at least
fabulous.
You have one. It's good.
Yeah.
Fabulous. Yeah. Fabulous.
Yeah. Thank you both.
Congratulations. Yeah.
Yes.
I'm going to come back to the diabetes thing simply to say that when you're doing a write-up or you are talking, actually, we don't need to do the full amount of homework that Bev did. And of course, it's easy for me to say that because I'm a nurse and I know what diabetes is and all of that. Yeah. But we really, really don't. When you see it on a form and you're going to meet your client tomorrow, you do not have to do loads of homework on what they have written on the form. Actually, somebody told me only yesterday that they had a special tube inserted. I had never heard of that before. I did look it up afterwards, but it hasn't affected anything about autogenics, and I knew it wouldn't. And I hadn't, and I mean, it was the patient at the hospital who told me, and so I hadn't got access to any of their other notes, so I hadn't got anything at all. They described it, why it was needed, what it was for, and so on. I thought, oh, that's interesting. I'm going to look that up afterwards. But it was my medical hat on that I was going to look it up, because we did talk about the impact it had had on his psyche and what he was having to deal with and all of that. And that is our job.
Yeah.
But the fact that she can do her thing so much, her blood sugar so much more easily now than she could 30 years ago. Yes, mention it in half a sentence. But we don't need to go into the detail. We really don't. So we have to write, of course, what we know, which is that we must warn the client that blood sugars might change, and that's why they need to do regular monitoring. We don't do the monitoring. And, of course, in the old days, they didn't have these devices, so they'd have been going off and doing their own fingerprints or whatever and then reporting any abnormalities themselves. Everything is always the patient's or the client's responsibility. We just have to explain why they need to make sure that those things happen.
Can I ask a quick question about that? So in this example with my client, how often would you bring up how the blood sugars are during a course, if at all, after the first talking about it?
Never.
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 Yeah.
They know themselves best. They know what their patterns are. If they've got something to report, I'm sure they would.
And what happens if the client doesn't report it? I think that's the bit in me that feels like I need to make sure I keep this on the radar just in case things change. I know it's written down, you know, if anything changes, it's on one of my handouts, you know, let me know and so on and so forth. Yeah, if it doesn't come up,
if it doesn't come up, you can assume there's no change.
Yeah.
And with this woman's experience of 30 years of having diabetes, she will know whether she's going to have a hypo or a hyper or whatever the reaction is going to be. She will know, and she can do that instant check so fast. And she's probably got a sliding scale of prescribing insulin. And if it's this level, she has this so much insulin, or she eats a chocolate biscuit or whatever, whichever way it's going. In other words, the patient is monitoring and managing. And we just let go completely of whether autogenic training is having any result with her diabetes. It'll come from her. Maybe in her follow-up, she might come back, and you could say at that point, how is all that going or something. We won't look for results, because the other thing, of course, is that although she has done AT and done it beautifully, it may have no effect on her diabetes because it's been so entrenched for so long. We really can't know these answers. And we don't have to worry about it. The essence of the assessment is the time you bring it up, of course, and say, in case there are any changes, I need to check that you are doing your monitoring. At least I don't need to check. I have to advise that whatever monitoring you're doing, you might step it up a little bit just for your own reassurance that there aren't any changes.
Thank you.
Is that
Yeah,
okay?
that's really helpful.
Yeah, it actually sets us free. We don't need to know. Donna, would you have anything to add? And Patricia?
I would just say, just remember, you're not there as a doctor. You're not there to monitor her health conditions. You're there to teach her AT. And that is what you're good at. You are the expert in that field. And
Absolutely.
they are people as well. It's not your responsibility to take on her medical history. You can, most people that come to AT, well, everybody that comes to AT is capable of understanding instructions. So we have to allow them to be responsible for their own health and well-being, and to know if there's any changes they need to report. So yeah, give some of the responsibility back to them. And let yourself off the hook. You know what you're doing. You're there to do to teach them AT, and you do that very well.
Yeah, she did bring it up in one of the sessions. She said that her blood sugars had been really good in her check-in, and I said, "Oh, were you looking at it on the app?" And she said, "Yes." And I said, "Is that now you've got that feedback because you have the app and you can see it, because it will give her a graph of what's been happening over the last 5 days?" And she said, "Yes," because she hadn't considered that. She just thought, "Oh, I must be doing something different because my blood sugars are really good over the last 5 days." But yeah, so interesting. Anyway, I don't want to take up any more time. Thank you, everybody, for your sharing and feedback. Appreciate that.
Thanks, Beth.
Yes.
Well done.
Thank you.
Can I just add something there? I have seen Bev's confidence grow over time, and I sometimes found my role a little bit difficult because I felt she was asking me what to do or how to do something, but I felt she knew the answer. So it was a way of me trying to sort of tease that out of Bev rather than, I not my role to tell her what she should be doing. And I think it was just I think backing someone, giving them their giving Bev maybe my support, congratulating her on her decision or something. And I think that's all she needed to sort of really get going, because she has been doing incredibly well. And I love that expression, about plain sailing. It's so nice to think, yeah, that stage has been reached, where things are plain sailing. It's great. So yeah, she has done incredibly well.
Thank you,
Thank you,
Patricia.
Beth. There we go. There we go.
Wow, you've done
Right.
really well.
Thank you. Right. Well, look, we're moving on a little bit late. Let's borrow 5 minutes from our coffee break. Pierre and Sebastian. Pierre? Yeah?
It's just so I fall asleep later on.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
So is that all right, Sebastian, if I go now? Yeah. Well, I had a client, not a client. I didn't want a client of mine to do it, because they know that I can do this soon and offer it, but I didn't want somebody that was biased. I wanted somebody that was totally didn't know who I was, so I could just get real feedback with how I was doing. So I asked a colleague of mine to if they had somebody in mind that maybe was stressed, and she says, "Oh my God, yes, Tess. I will refer. I'll ask her if she wants to do it," and I gave it at a very low cost price. She did pay a little bit for the sessions, but not a lot. And she knew exactly that I was doing this as a in my course, and she would be a case study, and she was more than happy with that. So Tess turns out to be a famous writer, and she's married to a stuntman in Australia, to a famous stuntman that's doing stunts for Tom Cruise in the movies of Tom Cruise, and so really, really high level Hollywood stuff. So they have been traveling all over the world with three small kids, and Tess had, since she was a kid, she had SVC, and I can't remember what it stands for, but it's basically it's heart rate that goes so quick that she's hospitalized four times a year, and she has to have monitored and have medication to bring the heart beat down, because it can, it's not that they can die, but they can get really, really ill with it, because the heart goes, what is it called, Jane?
I think that's supraventricular tachycardia. Does that sound right?
Where it just goes so quick.
It goes so fast. Tachycardia is usually a very, well, it can be anything from normal heartbeat, but to quite very fast. Yeah. Ventricular, the V would be the ventricular, so it's one of the ventricles of the heart which isn't functioning properly. And supra is above.
So really, okay.
Above. So that's I don't quite know. We'd have to look it up. I think that's the name.
I did look it up, and thank God I had Anne as a medical doctor, because I looked at it and said, oh dear, my first one. Oh dear. Anyway, Tess is a Christian and has a relationship with God. So she's not a Christian in the way of very church-going, dogmatic at all. But I thought it was really interesting in the way how, yeah, it was interesting. But anyway, she was really a fantastic. I was so, so glad. I learned so much through doing this of my own fear. She has dyslexia as well. So that was really interesting, because it triggered me and my dyslexia as well, because she was invited on a podcast with somebody, and she had to write a note in and stuff. And anyway, but yeah, so that I learned a lot. But what I learned with Tess was that she had very, very busy lifestyle and traveling all over the world. And now they had to stop, because of their kids were at an age where they needed to have set more rounded schooling and everything. She had writer's block. She was super stressed. Her heart was just going crazy. She was just being hospitalized, and she was starting to get very nervous with her ability to cope with life. She was very, very overwhelmed with life. And she says, no matter what I do and how I eat and drink and everything, I just can't. Something has to change. And that's why she was very, very happy that she got that offer of maybe this could help her. So she came in very open-minded, very, very open-minded. What else can I say? Tess, she had this thing with being so scared of her body and how the body would perform. And what she learned through the exercises was really interesting, because she understood the passive concentration. And I wondered, and I asked her, I said, is that what you do with prayer, where you just, and she says, yeah, it's very much like prayer for me. So she said, AT has been my spiritual practice now. And that's what I had when I was a kid. And I still see IT for me is my spiritual practice, you know, but I didn't share that with her, of course. But what was so interesting was that she came in with the first two exercises or three sessions, and then she had to stop and said, "Listen, I can't come because I got a very sick child, so I can't do it." And we had that was when we were getting on to the heart exercise. And I thought, oh my God, okay. So I said, okay. So I gave her the heart exercise, and the way that I did it with her, because I thought, Farah, this can really trigger her. So how do I do this? So what I said, and I learned a lot from this, because I said, Tess, your body knows what to do. Your heart knows how to beat. All we are doing is not that you're focusing on your heart and you tell it to beat properly. Allow it to be your heart and what it can do for you. It keeps you alive. And something must have switched in. And she did say, something switched in my brain. She says, me and my heart were enemies. And she says, I need to have a relationship with my heart. That's what I need. So, and then, so she got the, and this thing about your brain knows how to tell your body how to work. You don't need to do anything, just allow it to be. And so I learned a lot from that, because I think sometimes we don't know what to say, or I should talk for myself. I don't know what to say, but the words comes out of my mouth and they fire up. That was actually really good. And I think it got from above or anything, you know, because the words that came, I would not normally use, but it came through and it just really made sense to her. And long story short, she had it on hold and I said, fire out. So she's learned this with the heart. And when she did it, she said, oh, it was actually quite good, because when we did the exercise in the first class, with when I gave the exercise to her, that was when she had the realization with, I have been fighting my heart because I'm scared of it. And now it's like I have to allow it to be and let it do its work for me. And I said, but this is the words is it's calm and regular. That is the natural state of the heart. So yeah, it changed a lot for her. But then when she then cancelled and she says, I just have, I think, far out. Here she is, second week on the heart. What is that going to bring up for her? So what I did the same as you, Bev. I thought, okay, what would I do if I didn't have Anne on hand? What would I do? And I asked her how she was going. That was the first thing. And I said, I would really love if I could talk to you and just see how you're doing. And had I not talked to her, I would have written an email to her. But I'm not so good with writing, so I do it more with talking. And she says, I cannot believe it. I'm becoming a friend with my heart. It's keeping me alive. I mean, it sounds so silly, but it was so beautiful to see. And she says, do you know what? When I'm very stressed, then normally I know that something will happen with my heart. And it didn't happen. She had a stressful thing with her daughter and it didn't happen. And so I learned when a client for some reason can't do it, and I felt that it was okay not to stop the heart exercise but continue with it, because she was okay with it. And I said to her, listen, if you feel that you need to drop off, or then let me know, because then we can just do the holding exercise. And she says, I actually think that it's God has told me to do this because I've neglected my heart for so long. I need an extra week. And I said, okay, this is good. Look how it's working. So I told her that I would be on tap for her, so she didn't feel that she was just dropped like a hot potato. And then I checked with Anne and she said, well, absolutely perfect, and that will no risk in her to do the exercises because of her response to my questions. So I was glad that what I sensed was the right thing, if we can put it that way. So that was that. And then the next week I found out that I had to move. I mean, it was not planned or anything. And I said, oh my God. And she could not change the appointment because the removalist had to come. It happened very quickly, this situation that I was in. Actually, a result of offloading and meditation, AT meditation, but I'll tell you that later. I realized that. But so then she cancelled and then I cancelled a session. So that meant there was 3 weeks between the session. And I think this is not good. This is really not good. However, I then contacted Tess again and I said, listen, I cannot change the removalist. I have to take that date. Can you do any other date? And she couldn't. So we just made sure that she always did it. We had planned for the whole course, all the regular sessions for the Monday. And she says, I'm actually fine. I love hanging out with my heart. So it's okay. So the whole thing was to keep in contact if something. And I checked in both weeks twice with her. And always it was, and I would have dealt with whatever came up, but she was doing really well. And I checked with Anne as well how I did. And she said, it's actually good because now you know how to do it when life happens sometimes. And, you know, it's just what it is. So, you know, in a way, I was glad that I got that extra learning in what to do in a situation like that. So long story short, Tess now have no writer's block. And she's not cold anymore. She couldn't have cold showers. She couldn't go to the river and be with their kids because she was so scared she will have an episode. So she lived a half life. And this is what she realized, that I have not lived my life. And AT has given me my life back. I can't tell you. It was just so beautiful to see a woman and her husband would like to give a testimonial because he says, I actually got my wife back. She's not snappy at the kids. She's not scared of her body. And we can live a normal life now. And to see her take it so easy, he says, is just phenomenal. They had a really, really bad episode last year where he actually thought that she would die. So he has been a lot of pressure as well, you know, because he was a stuntman and they decided to stop it, him to be a stuntman simply because of the family. So out of AT, it had this flow-on effect on, I think we need to change life. We have lived, this is not right.
Yeah.
And he was getting older as well. So one thing that Tess learned was, and I learned a lot from this, I use the brain knows what to do, Tess, and you can only do what you can do. She was a perfectionist and a people pleaser, and she was so, the first three sessions, she says, I simply cannot get it in three times. She has an autistic child as well. She reckons it's autistic, so she's in many, what's it called? Doctor's appointments and whatever to have her diagnosed. So it's a very difficult child. But anyway, so she has a lot on her plate and she says, I cannot do it more than twice. I cannot. And felt so bad because it's just three times. And I said, but Tess, you're doing fantastic. You're doing it twice. This is all you can manage. This is your process. This is all you can manage. And she learned to do it in the car. And so we get up a little bit earlier, but she couldn't manage more than twice. And out of not doing it the perfect way of the three times a day and still have such a wonderful response. And I said, look, so she learned not to be perfect. So she said, good enough is good enough. And I said, yeah, good enough. I said, look what has happened to you. And she said, yeah. Then she had, and this was, in the end of the course, she went to a 40th birthday. So she was 42, by the way. And so for many years, she's had this, you know, four times to five times a year in the hospital. And she went to a 40th birthday. And this is where it blew her out. She had a glass of champagne and she normally doesn't drink because you can bring on her, but she had a glass of champagne because it was her best friend and they just toasted and whatever. And she says, I did a mistake, but normally I know that if I have a glass of champagne, then I really, really need to drink a lot of water if I have alcohol. And she didn't. And it was Monday morning and she woke up and she could feel it coming on. So she has her signs and she could feel it coming on. And she says, okay, Cal, I need to drink some water. It's coming. And he says, remember AT, remember AT, do your AT, do your AT. So she sat down and she didn't go to hospital. She didn't go. He says, so he is just in awe of AT because for the first time, she didn't have to go to the hospital. And he just sat there with her and she said, it's okay. I take the kids. It's okay. It's okay. And she said, for 20 minutes, I sat and I did my AT and the heartbeat just normally went down and it was normal. She says, I can't tell you, but I'm friend with my heart now. We are partnership now. We keep me alive now. So it was like her mind and the heart keep her alive. So it was totally stripped for her. She has no writer's block now. She's writing her books. And the husband wants to give a testimony of this because I got my wife back. So it was such a, because AT changed my life. And to see somebody, and it had nothing really to do with me. It's the method that works.
Yeah, that's isn't that why we all love it? Yeah. It is. I mean, you were there at a very remarkable place, and what a story that is! Very, very powerful.
Very powerful. Yeah.
Thank you, Pia. Well, yes, for your first client, and how I'm also very glad to hear that it was someone you didn't know. And
yes,
and actually, yeah. And they had quite a serious situation, and you worked with it, and it's that instinct which you're familiar. Let's face it, you have a lot of experience, don't you? You must be doing an offer, so that there'll be other things that your brain drew on just in that moment. And
absolutely.
Hey,
absolutely.
Wonderful. And it's not the first. I mean, I've had many successes with that sort of thing. The cardiac things are a complete mystery, it seems. They've now got something called POTS. I won't go into all of that, but that is also about tachycardia and a fast pulse, and it's posture related. And there's been lots of success. People are quite open. I'm sorry, it's not been as dramatic, shall I say, or as deeply felt as what you have just described, but people are able to travel on the underground again. They are quite confident that they're not going to pass out and collapse. And they just said that in passing. And I'm thinking, wow, you know, that really is big. And for them, they do appreciate that, but we move on to something else and it's sort of, you know. But the making friends with the heart is something, I mean, I think we probably mentioned it here in our sessions because it is certainly something that has been said to me over the years. And as long as we don't say it, actually, you did say it. You did say it to them, didn't you? I think. I can't remember.
What did
no, it say? Came from her.
It was her.
But you were saying her. Your heart is looking after you. That's right. It was that way round, wasn't it?
And the brain.
So, yes. And the brain knows, everything knows what it's got to do. All we have to do is allow it. And that was such a powerful message that she then put the friend's word in then, didn't she? And that's just...
And I forgot to say, she always had a very dry mouth.
Mm.
And now she's drooling. She says, I need to buy a bib.
Yes.
Yay!
Yes. We have supplies of nappies to tie around your chin while you're doing your AT. Mm.
Yeah, but I learned a lot. I learned a lot. I really did. And my awe of AT really, yeah, it's incredible. Really is. Yeah. So.
It's very intriguing to hear how all of that happened. When you said that she'd been working with, I wasn't quite sure about that when you were going to introduce the cardiac formula. And so, yes, you did have in mind, didn't you, to just for her to have the hold exercise,
Because I
to
thought,
go
well,
back
God,
to
well,
just to, yeah,
yeah,
leaving
like
her with
Moses.
that. But hey, that conversation where she was saying, "I've made friends with my heart," of course you didn't change it. I mean, that's absolutely the right thing. If anything, another option would have been, even while you were on the phone, to give her the breathing exercise. Because then she might have had the teamwork going at that point. But she could, I mean, only saying that as an offering, because
Yeah,
she
but that's
clearly
what.
didn't need it. I don't know,
Yeah.
Donna, what might you have done in that circumstance?
I think it just worked out perfectly, and I
Lovely.
think it was she needed that time with her heart.
Yes.
Maybe that was more of a mental process
Yeah.
of hers rather than adding in the breathing. I think that was there was something going on there, wasn't there? So she had the time
Yeah.
with the heart.
Yes.
And you moved on. So yeah.
Yes, and my thank you so much, Donna, because actually while you were telling the story, I was thinking, well, look, we've got a house move to cope with, we've got the child, we've got the things. This is its own message. And Donna, quite right. So she is staying with the heart. All seems to be well. And
Yeah.
you did everything right. You did check that out. And if it wasn't well, then you could have taken her back to the hold exercise. So we've got the strategies in there, should we need them, but you absolutely didn't. Yeah. I love that. I love that, Donna. You've just said she needed time with her heart. I love that.
Yeah.
And she got a lot out of the offloading as well.
Ah, good.
Yeah, a lot out of them as well. And she did the first two with, because apparently I didn't know this, but in acting they do the loosening up, the noise and the
Oh,
loosening up.
yes, a lot of those, yes.
So she made it into the family that they did it, all of them. So that was their exercise. So they were dancing around
Yeah.
and making silly noises
Yeah.
and all that with the kids. And then she went into the crying. The crying was massive for her because she actually cried for the lost time with her heart. So it was quite. See, I have a lot to say about the offloadings because anyway, but I learned so much about offloading with myself because I never really learned them when I, well, I did not learn them when I was a kid, but, and I didn't really use them a lot when I learned them from Nita because I didn't think, I mean, I didn't have a need for it where I was in my life. And oh my God, have I used them? The last 3 months is like, I know now what they do far out there good. Wow. Because I did them on myself and I really needed them and it changed my life. One of the reasons why I'm moving, by the way, because of them. So
Absolutely.
it's like, you know, I had no, and maybe this is not about tests, but I had no problems in knowing what AT would do for us. But before now, I was thinking, oh, circumcised, you know, with the offloading, oh, yep. Because I had not had the experience myself, how powerful they could be. So it was more a mental thing for me. But the last 3 months, I have used them like crazy and integrate that. And I can say to clients now, they work
Yes.
because I have had the experience. So that's been, yeah, now I know if that makes sense.
It does, and we always say, if you're not familiar with the offloading yourself, you won't actually teach them very adequately. You've now got such an experience from them. And of course, we still want to go slightly carefully for the people who are completely, oh, I don't like the sound of these at all.
I get
You don't want to go, and you won't want to go too much into the drama of them because you've experienced it. So
that.
we will always find that middle path. Just before we break for coffee, can I ask one question? You said that she was worried that she couldn't do three times a day. So what did she do twice a day? When in the
Yeah.
day? When in the day was she doing it?
So we got her up in the morning, 15 minutes before her kids
Before?
got up.
Yeah.
So that was a good thing.
Think,
She
yeah.
always did it at night. So I said, really, sometimes you do get three in. And then she will do it. And that was her rule that when she drives her kids, she will sit and wait for the, she will leave the house earlier when she was picking up kids and she did it in the car. I said, you've got to work with what you have.
Absolutely. Perfect. That's lovely. And you've just answered the question, because nighttime, people often say, I can't do it 3 times a day, and they're trying to fit it into busy days, and they're not doing anything at night. And that's a key thing that was very easy for us to miss as we train. And but she was doing it at night as well.
Yeah, just falling asleep,
That's
very, very.
fine. It's
And I said,
fine. It's the brain going to sleep in an
that's
autogenic
fine.
state. Absolutely fine. And people often, especially the perfectionists, they say, yes, but I can't get to the end. I've gone to sleep
Yes,
and I haven't done
exactly.
it properly. No. That's your nighttime exercise. The brain knows best what it needs next. Yeah.
And I use that a lot with her, and that's why I think, I really get now. The brain really knows. It really
Yeah.
knows.
I'm just curious, sorry to interrupt. You had the courage to take such a delicate case, considering that she's got a heart condition. I mean, personally, for example, if I was meant to have such a patient, perhaps such a client, I might have refused because I don't have experience. But you've got a lot of courage to accept such a case, because I think it's involving a lot of
No,
experience. And
do
I'm
you know?
surprised you didn't have any resistance when you introduced the cardiac exercise. Because, believe me, patients, I mean, I'm coming across patients, and believe me, when they, like, they've got like irregular habit, oh my God, they need to, oh, I'm not feeling right, oh, my heart is beating too fast. So they can panic, So I'm surprised you lead so wonderful, the what so wonderful
Let
living.
Pia answer.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think one thing, had I not worked with clients one-on-one for many years, I would have been a nervous wreck. I know that. Yeah. I would think, oh, this is out of my depth. I know that. So my experience with working one-on-one was a plus. Yeah. So that was one thing. But I also think, my intent was to do the best for her, and I say a little prayer. I mean, that's just what I do beforehand. I just trust that, listen, let me do the best I can do to help Tess and getting the autogenics structured, and give that, pass it on to her. So that gives some assurance for myself. But that's where I practice my AT, because if
I think
I
you're
don't.
very confident. You
Now,
were
let's
very
it
confident.
let can we just pull it back? Pia had Dr. Anne to consult as well,
Yeah.
which was a very useful thing to be able to have.
Absolutely.
And Anne would help any of you if you were uncertain. But I think the biggest lesson here, as Pia has already said, it's the autogenics that is doing the work. It is not us. We are not having then to pick up somebody who's fallen on the floor because they've got a heart condition. They are already doing that. So the chances are this is going to work out. We are going to have to finish, actually, but I'm just going to quote Dr. Luther, a wonderful phrase he used often. Your brain is doing a good job. And that's actually what you've been saying, Pia. And you're reassuring your clients. It knows what it's got to do. It's got out of kilter. And of course, what has really happened is got out of kilter because of the worries, the stress. She's been too much into her stress response, reactions, etc., etc. That's why the body is reacting in this way. There's no reason, I would say, at assessment, why that shouldn't reverse through doing autogenics, because we are addressing a stress response. That is something else to say. I say that all to you, Sebastian. Don't ever be put off. These stories are very powerful, and they actually say what easy work we do, actually. We've had diabetes and cardiac. What Sebastian's going to bring us? Shall we get our coffee and come back?
Oh, what a cliffhanger, Jane.
When do we come?
And
Sorry.
so let's start again. So the name of my client is Joanna. She lives in France. She works as an ENT specialist at a private clinic. I've been knowing her for a couple of years because I was one of her patients. And I think I discussed a bit when we had back in June when we had our course, I think I discussed a bit about the what is its name, the questionnaire. And it seems that there have been a lot going on in her life. So the fact is that she was born in the United States, so her mother tongue is English. And both her parents immigrated to States. When she was 18, she moved back to Romania as her parents wanted. She didn't want at all to come to Romania, but it seems that the parents decided just to be closer to the grandparents. And I think there is a big, I mean, there were some sort of issues in the relation with her parents. So first of all, she contacted me several times saying, you know, she knew that I was doing it. And she said, come on, I know that you've been trying to train as a therapist. Would you be happy to do the AT with me? She thought that perhaps AT might sort out one of her problems. So the main reason for contacting me was that actually the workload that she's doing is causing her a lot of distress. She's been working over 52 hours a week. And last time when, I mean, that was at the beginning when we discussed, she had a client and she had to put the diagnosis, lung cancer, and she spent like over 50 minutes over her time. That client has to be rushed to die, blah, blah, blah. There was a lot of going on. And she said she needs perhaps to do AT to help her relax a bit. But actually, it wasn't about the workload. There was a lot of things going on from her private life. So, and first she was quite hesitant. She didn't want to discuss about it. But when we reach, you know, the family relationships, she became quite open. So it seems that the father is very, very, is a cold and distant person. So it was very strict with her. So she wanted to study in United States, but it seems that the parents are telling her to move to Romania. And then she wanted to get a job as a lecturer at as a uni. She's sorry, at the uni, University of Medicine. Anyway, she's coming from a very wealthy family, and it seems that the parents disagreed all her relationships. She was married once. The husband was quite possessive, alcoholic. Anyway, a lot of things going on. She was involved in a car crash when she was a teenager, and she fractured her tibia. And as far as I'm aware, she didn't have any. She said that she wasn't emotionally affected by this. This is what she's saying. And as a kid, she suffered from panic attacks, and she didn't have any psychological input or any kind of therapy. And accordingly to her, that was sorted out later. I don't know how, but I think there was a bit of trauma. But I mean, from what I understood, the relation with her father, it's the main problem, as the father disagrees everything. So, and mostly, I mean, for example, if she done something wrong, instead of, you know, saying something constructively, the father was criticizing her. Everything for everything she was doing, the father was just criticizing her. So I think this is my view. She moved to France just to get the ownership on her life, you know. And yeah, so I have finalized, you know, to teach the course, but it's been interrupted twice because the issue with my dad. So for over 2 weeks, I couldn't teach. So after the, what is his name, the Happiness Part Two, I told her, please, we need to put this on hold and you have to do a short stitch. She was quite happy to do short stitch. And the second time when we put the course on hold was she caught COVID last month, and I just introduced the abdominal wand. And I said, if you can carry on, carry on. So we delayed with 1 week, but that happened when about 3 weeks ago. And it was the first time when I recorded the session. So sorry, I have to outline that all our sessions was done via Zoom. So unfortunately, you know, you wouldn't get a proper feedback, I would say. You know, you cannot look exactly at the posture. And yeah, and I was chatting to Donna about it. So when we rescheduled the forehead cool session, while I was teaching her, you know, the forehead cool exercise, she was coughing several times. And I had to stop the exercise. So I didn't know what to do in that case. I mean, shall I carry on or shall I put it on hold? And then I asked Donna afterwards, because at some point she told me that, when you were leading the breathing exercise, because I was coughing and it's something involuntarily, I had to hold my cough, not to cough. I was trying not to cough. So, I didn't know what to do. And,
Since you've stopped there, Sebastian, let's just remember what we've all been listening to. The brain knows best. If the body is coughing, it needs to cough. So you've just come out of the exercise.
No, I carry on. So that was my mistake. So I should have stopped, because I didn't know what exactly to do. And when I was leading the second time the exercise, the same thing happened. She couldn't, and she was forcing to, to try to control her breathing.
No, no,
Anyway,
no, no.
the other thing that I would like to bring forward is that she never mentioned about, and I was quite surprised that, no warmth or heaviness sensations. No, she had difficulties in controlling at the beginning the intruding thoughts, but after a while, she was quite relaxed. I noticed that actually she was relaxed, but I was actually questioning her at some point while we had the sessions. Have you experienced like some sort of saliva, she said no. So I wasn't really surprised, but some people it seems that they. Anyway, she seems to be relaxed during the sessions, but I was surprised that actually she didn't report it any sensation of warmth or heaviness, who knows? And then we had problems closing. So even during the forehead pull exercise, which was recorded, I'm not sure whether there was a technical issue. She couldn't hear me, but at the end, when I said close, she didn't close. And I noticed we had this issue at the beginning, and we had to agree. So the closing up was actually, I asked her, please, you clench both fists and your toes, and then you relax. Flexing and bending the elbows, she wasn't good with that, and she didn't want. So we agreed, as I was told, while I was, over the session that I had with you guys, that clenching, both fists and toes, and then relax, is efficient. Is this correct, or I'm wrong?
Well, that's our public clothes when we are in the car or in a, sorry, or in a train or in a bus or sitting outside and other people are around.
Yeah.
So what was her issue with clenching the fists and doing it?
No, she wasn't synchronizing properly. She said it, I don't know, but she did. So I taught her about three, four times, but she said, no, no, I find it a bit difficult, to bend, And then we agree, okay, so in that case, you just clench,
Yes.
both fists and, and toes, and then you relax. She
Well, I
was.
don't know about then you relax. Are you going back in, or do you mean you're going back into the next exercise?
No. You
No.
just release. You just release.
Oh,
So
I see.
clench
Okay.
and then
Oh,
you release
okay. Right.
tension.
Okay. So well, that's as perhaps as good as you can get. But did she tell you why she didn't want to do the? Was it just she didn't want to, or she wasn't able to do this movement?
I questioned her, and she said that, that's a good question. Yeah, she says she doesn't like it.
Doesn't like it. Okay.
And anyway, I think we cannot force, we cannot force a client, to do perhaps something that maybe they might not like it. I don't know.
Well, I'm intrigued because when we explain the close, it ought to be quite clear why we're doing it. We're putting the tension back into the muscles. We can feel it going up the forearms. And this is a vigorous way of just making sure that we're out of the autogenic state. And if that is explained, not many people complain about it. The ones who do usually have pain issues. They've got arthritis or they've got some old injury, or they've got something which interferes with actually making that movement. But otherwise, I don't know of anybody who is. I mean, nobody really likes doing it. It's a bit sort of weird, but we do have to try and persuade people And you probably did. What you did give her was the public clothes, which is certainly better than nothing. So, okay. But is it really adequate when someone is going quite deep and maybe they're not closing, later on in the course, then they're not closing the exercises until the very end? Is that adequate? That would be my question. What about you, Donna? You're mute. You're mute.
Yeah, Sebastian, I did speak about this, about going back and explaining again
Yeah.
why the close is important, and hoping that that would be enough to encourage you to do it. But clearly
No.
it wasn't, Sebastian,
No.
obviously.
And the other thing that, I mean, when I introduced the offloading exercises with the water noise, sorry, the garbage exercise, she was fine, you know. And then when we reached to crying, there was a big problem. She said she was starting crying. She couldn't stop. It recalled back a lot of fresh memories. And she said, no, I don't want to do it. I'm not fine with that. It made me feel bad. I don't want to do it. And I was trying later on to say, no, please, no, I don't want to do that. So I had to, to leave it because she refused to do it. She said it's recalling fresh memories and it made me feel so sad. And then again, she was resistant to the anger exercise. She said, anyway, she'd done it like 3 times a week, even when she was busy. She'd done short speech. If she couldn't do it, let's say, daytime, she was doing in the morning and, perhaps short speech on a break and then in the evening. But with the offloading, crying and anger, no, she said anger is very inauthentic. So I don't know, and I've been insisting. I explained the rationale behind and she said no. So, I had to leave it. Anyway, with the anxiety, and I explained her, you can say, for example, because I asked Donna and I asked for advice, I said, you can say, I'm scared to cry. I said maybe to turn, the cry into the anxiety exercise. And definitely what I find out that actually she's quite anxious. And when I had the last session, I think 2 weeks ago, and I asked her, to open, because, at the beginning, as we did, I gave her the pre-course questionnaire. And then at the end of the course, there is another questionnaire, that you fill it up in person, is confidential. And she said, yeah, it helped me to overcome some of my anxiety. I think she was, at the beginning when we started, she was really impatient, but at the end, she was quite confident, I think. And she said, yeah, it's actually helped me to manage better my anxieties. But I'm sure there is a lot of things going on in her past,
Yes.
with especially the relation with the
Oh,
parents, because
yes.
she was really hesitant.
Yes.
And at some point, she bursted into tears and said, actually, they ruined my life, the parents. So.
Which is a very useful topic, but powerful
Yeah,
to
so.
take into the anger exercise. It would be quite a challenge, wouldn't it? Did
And
you offer her any other ways of doing the anger exercise?
the anger exercise. I said, yeah, definitely. I said, I mean, you, I mean, I said, if you want to get up, or if you're not happy, if you're not happy to verbalize, just write it on a piece of paper, put all your thoughts, She said she tried that, but didn't work out. I think some of her anger is related to the parents. And I think, she's got like some sort of mixed feelings. At some point, she's criticizing the parents. And then, she's, I think it's like, what is the word? Ambivalence? Ambivalent.
Ambivalent,
Yeah. So,
ambivalent,
yeah.
yes.
So she's got like
Well,
some
look, if
sort of.
you were picking that up, you could put in general terms. Sometimes it's hard to do this exercise because it's somebody we love, or it's somebody who died, or something like that. Did you?
I did it. I mean, I has it. I mean, I try to avoid, like saying that, oh, you might, I mean, because I my gut feeling was that the fear was related was directed to her father, because the father was, I mean, from what I have noticed, I couldn't say that, I mean, I didn't know how to handle this, like to say, you should redirect your anger, not in
No,
here.
no, 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 not should. We don't need to do those things. You're absolutely right to stay clear of that. But maybe there might have been a way of finding a question. I wonder what it is that you're afraid of. It's sounding like you're afraid to do this. And, just open something up in that way. Sebastian, you're at the very beginning of doing this. And when you hit that, really, it's a hard face of resistance, isn't it?
So
So,
I find it really, honestly, so I'm not sure how AT helped her. Definitely, as I wanted to highlight, it's really important who is teaching it. And I think if someone's got like a background, you need to have experience while teaching AT. Or if you come across a delicate case like Pia and Bev just had, so I think experience helps a lot. But
Well,
in my case, I didn't know how to, how to, what can I do. Anyway, I'm not a therapist, sorry, I'm not a
no.
psychotherapist, and I don't want to get involved too deep, so you just teach them, and if they want to do
You
something, it's entirely up to them,
to them.
we
You're
know that
quite
it
right.
works.
Luther himself said many people don't go near these offloading exercises. So, okay. Now, with the crying one, it sounds like she did do it because it led her into real crying. Have I got that right?
But then she
Okay.
refused it. Then she said, I don't want to do it. Please, no,
Okay.
I
I
don't
know.
want to do
I
it.
understand you've said that. The thing that we need to do to try and encourage people is to say, actually, to cry is nothing. It's only an expression. It's how we feel, and something is moving out. We can feel bad while it's going on, but when we get to the other end and we stop crying, we might feel very tired and pretty low mood. And yes, we might. The next day, it very likely will feel different. Did you put, if we learn that kind of language when we're teaching autogenics, that can help.
So we discussed about on three different occasion about this, and I said, you don't actually need to cry. I mean, you just need to replicate, But she said, I mean, first she gave it a go, but then she said it brought up fresh memories, hurts a
Absolutely.
lot. I don't want to cry. It
Okay,
made me feel bad.
I don't want to is not the phrase that we acknowledge in this situation. Actually, the crying exercise did lead her into real crying. That's
Yes,
perfectly
yes, yes,
normal.
yes, yes.
Perfectly normal. And so Luther would again say, your brain is doing a good job here. It needs to happen. Let the crying happen. Yes, the memories are there. That's why you're crying. Let's move them out. Let's take the word emotion as being moving out. So we can put some language there, which doesn't have to be you going deeply into her problems.
But
It
I
is
didn't.
just technical.
But Jane, I didn't ask even what is actually make her cry, because she just stopped there and said, I don't want to talk about it.
No,
We
well,
need to move
I'm
on.
not saying you should have asked her.
Definitely.
Okay, but what you can say, this sounds like a really good crying exercise. It's led you into what needs to be done. Okay, you didn't like it, but actually you did good work there. That's the sort of thing we can say to support what they have done. So this will come, it will come to you, Sebastian. Honestly, it will. Please don't put yourself down because otherwise you're going to not teach somebody.
I'm sure there are a lot of improvements that I can
Yeah.
do in future, but
We
definitely,
all have to learn the language. Did you tell her about crying need symptoms?
Yes.
Okay. Because that's the way that I always start. I don't mention the word crying until I have given people all of that list of symptoms, which and I've read them out, and then people say, "Oh yes, I get headaches. Oh yes, I get pain. Oh yeah, okay." They get engaged with what you're talking about. Then you say, "This might well be a need to cry if these symptoms are persistent." People latch onto that, I have found. Anyway, this is your good start. She's got somewhere, hasn't she, with being more confident managing her workload. Sorry, I'm now doing the talking.
No, anyway, I'm done. That's all. So, yeah. So, we
You're
had the
not?
last session. So, it's going to be the follow-up perhaps in a few weeks.
Okay.
So, yeah, but I was surprised that actually, despite that, I had to put it on hold once because of my 2 weeks and few days because of
Yes.
my.
And I had a
Because of...
question there. You said carry on with short stitch.
Yes.
She had Heaviness Part Two.
Sorry.
She had got to Heaviness Part Two, hadn't she? That's what you told us just now.
Think it was Heaviness Part One. I need to check again. I need to know, but definitely she was. Yeah, I was. I told her by that time to do short stitch, so she
Yeah.
was on short stitch for about 2 weeks.
Okay.
Is that right or not?
Well, yeah, I mean, it is right. If it was Heaviness Part One,
One, no, part one,
but
part one.
you said Part Two
No, no, no,
here,
no, no.
and
Sorry,
then
part
that
one.
would have been fine for her to carry on with
No, no, no,
that
no, 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 no,
over the
no,
break.
no,
Okay, so
no,
it was
no.
within
Just
Part
sorry,
One.
part one, part
Yeah.
one. Sorry, part
Yeah.
one. No, no, not part two.
Yeah.
Part one. Part one.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Okay, you know, that's very good that she did that. Yes. And very good of you. Any comments? Anyone else? One
I
thing
think some people are very afraid of certain parts of the AT thing that we teach them. I had a client who was very resistant to the clothes, the fists and this. And when I tried to get them to explain what their problem was, they said they felt it was a very violent, threatening stance. And that made me think it's bringing up something maybe from her past, but it wasn't my place to chase that and try and find out more about it. And also the crying and the anger exercises, the intentional exercises. I've come across people who are actually afraid of it. They're afraid, they know it's big, but they're afraid to allow the crying because they think they're terrified they might completely lose control with the crying, and the same with the anger. And I try to sort of introduce the safety side of it. And if they, for instance, they're angry with a parent, it could be a parent who died long ago, but they still retain a lot of this anger. And to let them know they're not harming that person, they're not doing any damage, but they're doing something to offload that safely for themselves. And it sometimes works quickly, sometimes it doesn't. But it's I understand some people are afraid of certain things that we introduce to them, and we just have to sort of go with that and do what we can. Yeah.
Thank you. That's very important, and we do have to go with them. You're quite right. And with any luck, something else will pop up in another session. Maybe something like perhaps something in work, and she's talking about this or that. And we can pick that up because perhaps we hear some anger or frustration in their voice. And then we can say, that sounds like you've got a bit of anger around that. And they say, oh, well, yes, of course I have. I've always got the anger around. Well, have you done any offloading about that? And actually, the parent thing might be too big for them to go to. But when it comes to a work colleague or something or some others or somebody who's not close to them, then they suddenly realize, actually, yes, I was really angry about that. So you can both have a little laugh and a smile about it and say, well, actually, why not do some anger offloading? You've only got to pretend you're hitting them in the face, or you've only got to pretend. So sometimes we could pick something up. You're quite right, Patricia, to point out you're not hurting anybody. All you're doing is helping yourself to
Yeah.
work these feelings out, and they are only feelings. And babies do it without turning a hair. So all we are doing is relearning how to do little bits of it.
Yeah.
Donna.
Yeah, no, I was just one thing I did pick up from Sebastian when we were having supervision sessions was how do you deal with somebody that doesn't give feedback? Because your client, if I remember, Sebastian, wasn't very forthcoming with, how have you been getting on? Yeah, fine.
Yeah, true,
And
true.
you were finding it very difficult. It's like getting blood out of a stone, really.
Yes,
So I thought
because
it might have been a good thing to bring to group supervision, because we all come across it. Even me now, definitely. Some people do not want to give. So I just thought that was something that came up as a struggle.
At
Doesn't
some
sound
point
right.
it was really hard to get the feedback.
Yeah. So I thought it just might be worth a discussion about how other people handle it as well. Because obviously I've given my side of it, but that's only one side.
Yes,
Devin.
yes.
Bev, you had.
Do you want to say something, Sebastian?
Sorry, I forgot to mention, but at some point, I spoke to Donna. I had difficulties, like getting feedback. So I mean, I'm not sure what exactly. Maybe she was resistant, maybe because she refused it a few times. I mean, not a few times to, discuss, whatever, was upsetting, But definitely, even, like feedback related to the practice, sometimes, it was fine. And I asked, at some point I give her the list with, all the reactions, body sensation. Yeah, she said tingling, this, that, tummy rumble, but like the lack of saliva, and, other react. I mean, anyway, she was carrying at the beginning like a notebook, and then she said no, it was too difficult to carry it at work, and she started taking little notes in her phone. I said, fine, that's completely fine with me, as long as you have something to report. But some other times, I'm not sure, I didn't get any feedback. Some other times. So
I'm
what
kind of,
about, go ahead.
well, I'm just wondering, we've all had that. It's a stone wall, isn't it? And we can't get past it or over it or through it or in any way. So I need to attend to myself in that situation. How am I feeling about this? Bloody frustrated. Okay, so what's the clue in there? I'm the therapist. I'm really frustrated with this client who's giving me nothing, even though I'm doing my best to get some kind of report from them.
Well, you have judgment there, haven't you?
Well, yes. Maybe not, actually. I have realized that I am really frustrated about this situation. What can I do with it for me?
You can
Good afternoon.
offload. Yes, you can offload your frustration. You can take it to supervision.
Well, the first thing is to deal with me. You can tell that by my body language now, can't you? I might shut the door after that client has gone and think, phew, goodness, what on earth was all that about? Right, I better do my offloading. I'm not going to take my anger into my off in, I'm sorry, into my supervision. That's not fair on the supervisor. I'm going to do some offloading with my client in my imagination, sitting in that chair, and I can say whatever I like to them, having spent a session wondering how to get past this stone wall. It's quite useful to be able to allow myself that freedom. Bev.
Yeah, what I found myself doing in my preparation for each week was reviewing a list of questions that I'd written, and they're open-ended questions that are designed to try and get feedback. Should I hit that stone wall? Because that frightens me as an inexperienced therapist at the moment. I'm like, well, it's important to monitor what's happening with my client. If I don't get the information, then I don't know. And
That's
I
a good
found,
thing. That's a good thing to say to your client.
yes,
Yes.
absolutely, that,
Yeah.
because it's a fine balance between kind of having open-ended discussions about what's happened in the week and it becoming an interrogation. So it's about finding that fine line. So I have those questions printed out as prompts for me. If I found that actually my client often said to me, yeah, everything was fine. And she realized as the course progressed that I wasn't going to let that lie. And And what happened, because I continued with the form of questioning and I didn't accept just fine, she started volunteering more information,
yeah.
almost anticipating that I was going to ask some probing questions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this word probing is an interesting one, isn't it? Because we don't want to, it's not psychotherapy, as we're saying. But so if we leave out the word probing, but they're just practical questions. These are natural things that people talk about when they're doing autogenics. So that's all they are.
Yeah.
That's very nice. So you were educating her through those questions. Of the future things. And people had no worries. It can feel a bit like school, can't it?
Yeah, and I think some of the questions relate to what might have come out of the previous week's session. So if she was having any difficulties, it might have been, you know, my client's clothes technique, I needed to revisit it. You know, she's kind of closing like this.
Oh, yes,
and
yes,
I realised she didn't have much space either side of her, and we need to redemonstrate it. Yeah. So some of it would be asking her how she's got on with the clothes in the previous week and if it's more comfortable for her. And then others will be checking in on passive concentration, how she was able to practice it and so on.
We're moving away now, but thank you. That's hugely helpful for, yes, having some ideas about questions to ask, definitely. Are we doing our own offloading ourselves? What about you, Donna? Have you done offloading?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do offload a lot. Something I'm trying to remember what I said to Sebastian in the supervision. Obviously, we did talk about this. But now I'm wondering if with some clients, I might say something as well as though, oh, I'm finding this really difficult. I feel like I'm grilling you. And I put it on me. So I feel not frustrated or any of those feelings, but I feel this is difficult. I feel that I'm, I don't know, hitting my head against a brick wall. I feel like I'm grilling you and it's uncomfortable. And
that's not what I want to be doing.
Yeah, and I'm just trying to get a sense of where we are. And sometimes that'll be that, like Bev was doing, almost they'll think, oh, perhaps this is where I need to say something now. Perhaps this is what it's about. And this is where I say, oh, yeah, on Tuesday I had some tingling. On Thursday I didn't get on with it but something. And yeah, I'm not just looking for, oh, yeah, fine, lovely, relaxing, which are the three common ones that we get.
And we don't always know if people are practicing.
But no, absolutely. Yeah,
so,
and that can come out there as well, you know, and even just rewinding and going back. So, okay, I'd suggested three times a day. Have we managed that? And that might, oh, no, actually. And we then have a conversation. Or sometimes it's, yes, full stop again. And then we have to keep going. And some people, I have had one or two that I have just had to, okay, that's all right, it's just lovely, because you can't.
But I believe every experience is like unique. I mean, I might feel something, you might feel something else, someone else might not feel.
Of course, but we do want to know what their experience is.
Yeah,
so
true.
That's the point. Now, I have had a few heart sink patients over the years. The heart sink patients are the ones who are like this, the stonewalling ones. Yes. And when I have done an offloading exercise, before that patient has come back again, you know, 2 or 3 days or maybe even the day before, hey, it's a completely different experience. So if we look after ourselves, when that client comes back, there's a different dynamic. There's a different changed energy going on. And it's the solution to everything.
Yeah.
And I won't tell them that that's what I've done unless we've made such good friends afterwards that actually I say, do you remember that time when so-and-so, I did an anger exercise about you, actually, but you've moved on so much since then. I can now tell you that. And look where you've got to now. It's a wonderful, wonderful method that we should be using for ourselves.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree.
There's something about trust in that, isn't there, in the therapeutic relationship, that, you know, some of the stonewalling might be because they've not sussed us out and whether we're trustworthy for them to share what might be arising for them.
That's very interesting. It could well be. Yes, and maybe there's mirroring going on, and what they are not telling us is actually something that's happening in our own lives or has happened or whatever. But yes, we don't. We honestly, it can be a real minefield if we chose to analyze it, and it's much better if we don't. And if the therapist is practicing what they are preaching, then that is a really good way to unlock a lot of that stonewalling.
I find I use intentional.
Sorry, Patricia. It was Pia who had her hand up just now.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm
so sorry.
Okay.
It's okay.
Can we? Right. Pia?
Hey. Oh, what was it I want to say? Oh, I find, and I learned this in voice dialogue, and I'm certainly going to do that in AT as well. When people say, oh, I'm fine.
Yeah.
Then it just shuts the door.
Yes, it does.
Then I was taught to say, "Oh, I'm curious. What does fine mean?"
Mean? Yes.
And then they have to. What does it actually mean? How does that feel in your body?
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to open up a whole new way because we're just curious.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you. That's a huge thing. Actually, is to pick up the word they've just said, and then reframe it in a slightly different way, and they come back with so Patricia, what were you going to say?
Off the table.
I was just going to say about the intentional offloading and anger. I use it all the time, but I don't, my anger offloading, I don't throw things, I don't punch pillows or anything like that. I usually talk it. And I deal with it as soon as I can, you know, just small things. I remember, actually, it was a good while ago, Donna sharing about talking to her clients about anger, because, you know, just a niggle could be a form of anger. Just a bit of frustration can be a bit of anger.
Yeah.
And I just use it and get rid of it. And if it's a person that has upset me for whatever reason, I can be like walking home from the supermarket and providing there's not a lot of people around, quietly saying it, you know, things like, you know,
I mean,
but just telling that whatever it is to get out of my head, I'm not giving you space in my head.
Yeah.
And that is getting rid of it for me.
It is an anger offloading exercise. I mean, really, we might be making heavy weather of them. Anger is a strong word. You've just used the word niggle. So don't say to your clients that everything is anger. Introduce some other words which are not so confrontational.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we have a more opening doors. Sorry, I had to cut in. We've only got 15 minutes for our next session. But I want to congratulate you all. You've done really, really well. You've all taught one person now, which is really good progress. I look forward to reading the studies. And just make them conversational. Please don't think that we are sitting in judgment on science or insights. If you've got any insights, they'll appear anyway. Just tell the story. And if it's told in a way that's clear, we're going to come to that a little bit later on, how we introduce things. Yes, go on, Donna.
Sorry, I'm going to say, shall I stop this recording now so we've got it in a nice segment?
Yes, in a